Hello, welcome to For the Love of Weather. This is the podcast where we explore the Earth's atmosphere and how we are all connected through the weather and climate. We are your hosts, Gemma and Aisling. We're both meteorologists and weather presenters and have been working in weather now for over 15 years. We are so happy to have you here on the podcast with us today. And as always, we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more and learn a little something about how the weather and climate can impact our daily lives. Hi, I'm Gemma.
Hello, I'm Aisling, and today we are welcoming somebody completely unique, something we have never done before. It's Alice Stevens. Welcome to the podcast, Alice. Alice is a senior lecturer in graphic design at the Arts University Bournemouth and is currently doing a PhD, which is at the intersection of British weather, creative practice and eco-linguistics. There's a lot to unpack there. Where her research explores eco-linguistics and the British weather in relation to design practice and embodied experience. So you have had art installations before. You're basically taking art, you're taking weather and you're putting them together. In 2023, she presented two projects that aim to inspire people to inhabit the British weather differently. Welly Walks, who does not love that name? I want to know who came up with that. And Rain Trail, which we're excited to learn about in this episode. And then in 2016, you founded AUB Human, a university platform that celebrates social, ethical and sustainable creative practice. All incredible stuff and stuff I don't know about. It's, you know, absolutely cannot wait to find out about it. So we always start off our podcast by asking the person who's joining us, where was your first spark of joy for creativity and the weather?
Oh, that's a great question. But yeah, thanks very much for inviting me on the podcast. I think growing up in Dorset, I think I tend to be very close to the weather and very affected by weather. And also as a sailor, so somebody who's very attuned to the wind. My daughter's currently a sailor as well. 20 years in London, then having kids, moving out of London again and kind of refinding my relationship more with nature, and the weather being kind of instrumental to that. As you mentioned, I did founded AUB Human probably about 9 years ago now. And I think that was really in response to feeling that students wanted to do something more meaningful. And I think a way of introducing or finding that catalyst for them was about seeing where they could solve problems and use their creative practice for good. And actually from doing AUB Human for 9 years kind of inspired me to think, actually, I want to be doing my own practice. So back in the day, I used to work for mainly for Channel 4, doing sets, youth culture, which I loved. It wasn't really so much the time of sustainability, I would say, in graphic design or communication design practice. But obviously, throughout the period of time of doing AUB Human, it became absolutely kind of crucial and critical. And as I said, students were looking for more, to have more purpose and to make more of a difference through their own creativity. So I think it's all of those things kind of combined together that just felt like the right moment. So when I thought, actually, I want to get back to making my own work, it was always going to be something about that was for purpose, around sustainability. And the opportunity to do a PhD just really gave me an open slate. So I didn't set off with a particular thing to do. I've followed what felt like the right creative response. And I acknowledge I'm really privileged in that, you know, very privileged in that space to just be able to do that. So when I used to work in industry, I was very much, you know, providing solutions, designing sets, creating motion graphics. But when I had the freedom, I found that I'm creating these much more kind of installation and embodied experiences that just try and reach out to anybody and wanting to put them in the environment where people come across them. I don't want it to be something whereby people have to make a conscious effort to come across these installations. So they're really about triggers of trying to connect people to nature. And I do that through the weather as a way to talk about climate change. That's something we experience every day. That's a bit of a mouthful of an answer there. But yeah, so I'd say that's the crux of it. It's the weather as a way to talk about climate change that that people experience, that because in all honesty, people have had quite a lot of talk around climate change, and it's a really big abstract thing, whereas the weather is something that the British are absolutely, we talk about all the time. It's something we experience. We have wonderful, diverse, unpredictable weather in the UK. And that for me just became the conversation point that I wanted to kind of start having these conversations.
I think it's really interesting, the creativity side, because obviously me and Aisling come from like the science side, so that's how we see weather. But when I was learning about some of the stuff that you've done, I was like, that's so interesting to think of weather in a totally different way, this really creative way to get people to really engage in it as well. So how do you go from, I want to talk about rain, say, or get people engaged in rain, like, and get to the process of how do I make it creative and actually engage people in that?
Great question. So I am a creative, I'm a very visual person, and ecolinguistics has been quite seminal in my research journey. So I'm doing a practice-based PhD, but ecolinguistics is really looking at language. And I, as a professor, Aaron Stibb, his kind of research really kind of, he talks about only sunny weather is good as a narrative. So that we have this only sunny weather is good narrative, which is a very kind of dominant Western narrative. And this was really kind of quite inspiring to me in terms of, yes, absolutely, this is true. And then obviously, you know, the world we live in with climate change, and actually, according to IPCC data or the Met Office data, actually in the UK, we're going to be experiencing warmer, longer, wetter winters. And actually, if we don't start embracing those, you know, what does that actually mean for us? It means that we're probably going to hide away indoors longer, and that's not really going to be good for our mental or physical health. And actually, we start infrastructuring and building worlds to block out the weather, and that in turn adds, you know, it maybe makes us more inclined to kind of want to fly away to different countries, you know, continuing with aviation issues of aviation around you know, the environment and carbon emissions, fast fashion that comes from that. So I think for me, around ecolinguistics, is ecolinguistics really kind of speaks to people who are more what I would say are the literary readers. So how do you start kind of talking to people who maybe perhaps don't consume information in that way? And that's why I thought, actually, I want to do something that takes the principles and use ecolinguistics as a framework, but I want to create these interventions that are visually engaging, that continues that narrative in a very different form. And that's why I started using what I would say are quite cliches of weather. So for example, welly walks, as you mentioned, they're bright yellow wellies. They say weather immediately, and people are kind of drawn to them because they look fun. So that's really been my approach, is to make something visual, make it really accessible as a way to have these more serious conversations and bring quite meaty subjects that perhaps people wouldn't initially engage with, and make them very accessible. And then they're kind of multifaceted. So, for example, with the welly walks, you can have somebody who's three wear them and enjoy them on one level, and then people who are more interested. So what was amazing at the festivals where they've kind of taken place is how a whole range of different types of people have been interested. So, as I said, like, you can be three and come and wear the wellies. You can be 60. It doesn't matter on the age. They also engaged teenage boys who were interested because obviously they contain technology. So that became another aspect that was interested to some people. And then the more conceptual sense. So that's really what they're trying to do, is draw in a lot of different people and have serious conversations, but in a playful, fun way.
I have so many questions. I'm going to have to like pick which one I want. So where do I start? It's, you know what? It's so interesting that you said, I hadn't actually ever had that thought where the idea of hiding away from the weather. So I'm sure you can tell actually why you won't be able to see this, obviously, if you're listening, but I'm really pink. I've got quite a lot of pink in my skin. And so this time of year is really difficult for me, because even when I wear, so I need to take in vitamin D, but even when I wear sunscreen, I'm still really pink. So I do actually hide away from the weather. And I hadn't thought about that, because I absolutely love the weather and I love everything around us. But so what will be my first question? You haven't actually explained to us, these wellies, Tell us about the wellies. So go back to the
Yes.
beginning. Tell
Okay.
us about them. So why would this 12, like a 12-year-old boy be like, oh, I want to wear the wellies? Start there.
Yes.
Tell us all about
Okay.
the
All
wellies
right.
from the
So,
beginning.
Welly Walks is essentially they were showcased at a festival in Bear Regis in Dorset, part of Inside Out Dorset, which is a biannual festival put on by Activate Performing Arts. And they were working in collaboration with Dorset Wildlife Trust, who'd just obtained this absolutely amazing site called Wild Woodbury. And they've done it as an 800-year project around rewilding and rewetting. So it's about letting nature take its own course. And as a way to kind of launch this, it's a community rewilding project, which actually I think is the first one in the UK. So actually as a way of kind of launching this site and opening it up to the public, Activate Performing Arts had come in along with various other different collaborators. But it was about kind of inviting the public. So it's an old farm. Actually, it's not a sang, so the land itself is not like super pristine primary nature. It is about the community being able to access it. And what's quite interesting about these communities, say like for example in Bear Regis, is even though you think they're in the middle of this amazing kind of landscape, actually access to nature can be quite difficult for some of these communities because it might be, you know, farmland or all private land. So it was about giving this land to the community and letting them think about how they're going to manage it. It's an 800-year-old project. So they've planted oak trees and different things like that. So that's the kind of context of where this project came from. And Welly Walks themselves are a pair of weather sensing audio Wellington boots that sing eco poetry to you, which is a bit of a mouthful. But I've worked with a creative technologist called Mark Benson. He's done all the creative technology for all of my projects. And all of that tech is embedded in the wellies. So they just look like a pair of wellies with a crazy speaker on the side. And there's a whole section. So they've got an atmospheric barometric pressure sensor inside. So it's really low tech, lo-fi technology. Just goes in the Wellington boot. Once the weather is kind of predicted, if you like, it draws from a whole bank of different poems written for different weather conditions. So they're sensing the weather, and then hopefully, whatever the weather is, they then give you an appropriate poem for that. And the poems, based on walks with Seb from the Wildlife Trust at the site, I kind of started writing the poetry as site specific to try and connect people to that particular piece of land. And then once I'd got them to a certain kind of stage, I then worked and collaborated with an amazing poet called Zakia McKenzie, who then refined and extended and wrote the rest of the poems. So there's a whole bank of poems, ones for different things, whatever you can kind of sense, you know, so whether they're rain or whatever. So when people kind of came to the festival, which was over 5 days, they could just borrow a pair of wellies, take them out, wander wherever they wanted to. And I specifically didn't want it to be something whereby you had it on your mobile phone. I wanted it to feel like it just happened, and so that it offered up that kind of magical experience. And what was quite interesting from what people said is some people were like, oh my gosh, these wellies are so clever. They mentioned a butterfly and a butterfly flew by. They weren't that good, but because they were written for the context, people believed they were kind of imbuing more belief in what the wellies were actually saying. Actually, they were only doing the weather, but obviously they were written for that time of year around the types of things that you would expect to see. And also, people made lovely comments. So another comment was, this is actually quite an ordinary piece of land at the moment. You know, it's like a farm, there's nothing really, you know, but actually the wellies helped them not only connect to that environment more, but see more specialness in it. I don't know, is specialness a word? Anyway, see more, they got more from having the welly experience, they got more from the walk and seeing it. And yeah, I mean, it was a first prototype, so there were problems with them as well. You know, so for example, the wellies were really clever in some ways, but really stupid in others. So they wouldn't know not to speak over another pair of wellies. So we would just send one person out in a group. And then we encouraged other people that when the wellies started walking, that they stopped and they, you know, they paused and they listened. And another thing that people said was they were real catalysts in conversations. So other people would talk to them because they were wearing these kind of, you know, crazy bright yellow wellies that were talking to you. Just their appreciation of that environment, the appreciation of the language that perhaps they were thinking of that they would use in regard to the weather. So really, that's what I was trying to do as well, is get people to think about the language they're using, because a lot of the language we use around rain is really super negative. And actually, if we can start to change and have a different dialogue around the way that we talk about rain, it might make us engage with it. There's an amazing linguist called Michael Halliday, and he talks about how language informs culture. You know, so actually, if we start looking at the language that we use around rain or cloud, could it actually start to kind of change how we relate to it? And if we relate to it and have a better, more nuanced relationship with these types of weather conditions that are often considered less favourable in the UK, could we build better relations with it that actually are more in tune with those conditions, that help us live more harmoniously with nature rather than against it?
You mentioned so many amazing things there. As you were talking, I was just like, yes, yes, this is all amazing. First of all, as you was explaining, I was thinking as well, like, when people are listening to those poems and thinking about the weather, I can really imagine that it made them more aware. And as you say, the butterflies, like, really aware of what was around them. And I suppose some people, when they walk, sometimes they're just looking down to make sure they don't trip, but they're not really looking at what's around them and taking in maybe the butterfly or the ladybird or a certain plant or flower. So I can imagine that being in that moment, they really took in their surroundings more. But also, I was thinking, are these wellies still available to try out? Because I'd really, really like to give them a go, because they sound amazing. They sound great.
I will send you a pair. Well, next time I'm in London, I will bring you a pair. And I've got a good amount. I'm actually taking a pair to Glasgow in about 2 weeks to speak about them in a conference. But I will definitely make sure you get a pair, Gemma. Maybe I'll come up and we'll have a coffee and I can bring you some to try out, which will be
definitely
amazing.
Yeah, that would be amazing, because yeah, as soon as you were talking, I was like, I want to walk around London with these wellies on and like have poems and get people like, come on, listen to this poem about the rain, listen to this, and get like loads of people around, let's learn about the weather together, let's go.
That would be awesome. No, I'd love that. I just want to add as well with the poems, I don't know if you've heard of the amazing folk singer Kate Rusby, but she gave permission for me to use some of her songs in the wellies as well. So at the end of each of the kind of the poetry threads, there's a song by Kate Rusby, who is amazingly awesome, and again writes a lot about kind of nature and just getting people to kind of slow down and listen and think about things differently and try and kind of inspire just a closer relationship with that, and to think differently about our environment, rather than, you know, thinking we have to go elsewhere for amazing things. It's like kind of trying to kind of see that detail. But
I'm trying to think of the name of the festival that Kate Rusby has. Under the Stars or something. Is it a festival under the stars? Or
yes.
Oh, God, I don't know. Because, you know, my friend loves her.
Does she? Yes, she's awesome. No, she has a pair of the wellies, Gemma. She's already got a pair of the wellies.
I'm very jealous, I must say. I never had yellow wellies when I was little. And as you were saying, like, people really associate them with rain. I was thinking, I obviously had wellies, but I didn't have the yellow ones. And I can imagine adults as well see those wellies and, like, that takes them back to being a child, or those memories come back. Running around, jumping in puddles. Like, who doesn't want to do that? Like,
no, I know. Who doesn't want to do that?
Exactly.
Yeah, I must admit, my favourite one is, I love breaking ice. You know, when it's really cold and you kind of break ice with your wellies, it's just so compelling to kind of do that on a walk. I absolutely love that. And I have a special tree in my garden as well, which is my rain tree. So it's the nicest place to be in the garden, because it's got really good cover and just be under the tree. And last year we got one of these metal benches that wraps around the tree. So you can just sit under this tree and really, and because we had quite a wet summer last year, it was the nicest place to kind of sit under the tree, maybe with a glass of wine, watching the rain and listening to the rain come through and fall, you know, fall on the leaves. So I have a favourite rain being tree.
Do you know, I think it's so important to give things names like that. So I move around a plant every week into our hall and I just call it plant of the week. Like, I don't know the names of the plants, but it somehow engages my children with that plant. So every day they'll say, oh, this is our plant of the week, how's the plant doing and stuff, and it's just giving it a name. And I love that you've called your tree the rain tree, and suddenly this tree is just more special because you've given given it a name. And yeah, it's fantastic. Tell us a little bit more about Rain Trail.
Rain Trail was at Arts by the Sea Festival, Bournemouth Arts by the Sea Festival. So that's a festival, I think about 200,000 people go to that. It's annual and it's in Bournemouth, put on by a BCP kind of cultural team. Nuala Clark really kind of leads that. And again, it uses yellow. So I tend to kind of keep yellow as one of the kind of key colours. And what that is it was designed using hydrophobic paint. So basically that is paint that is activated by water or rain. And I wanted it to be a trail in the festival whereby if it rains, people would be drawn out to come and see it because it would only be activated if it rained. I think one of the problems with festivals is they tend to be put on at times of year where they're imagining there's going to be less rain. So I thought, do I just have it that it's with rain, or do I try and kind of mitigate the concept and have it whereby if it doesn't rain, people still get something from it? So the idea is that it would rain and it would reveal these illustrations that would only be revealed by rain. And I love this idea of feeling like a rain collaborator, and that actually it only was revealed by rain and people would have to be drawn out if they wanted to see it to follow this kind of illustration and poetry trail. As it was, I did design it as mitigating against not rain. So I designed it as a kind of performance whereby this would invite the public to come and be the rain themselves. So we had various different kind of watering cans and little kind of sprays, and we introduced it at the beginning of the trail. And then I had a poet. So again, Ben Whittle, who'd produced some of the poetry for the Wellington Boots, I met when I was doing a creative writing workshop with the AUB creative writing students. And he really loved the project and he said he'd love to be more involved. So I said, oh, why don't you create a poem for the rain trail? So we'll introduce the project. We will do like an extended poem for each of the locations of the trail. And the illustrations that I drew, actually, I'd kind of taken from the concept of wellies, and I wanted to elevate things like weeds and things that are really good for the soil health and things like that. But we tend to kind of think of weeds in a really, you know, even the name weeds, we think of them in a really negative way. So it was really about trying to challenge the notion of weeds. So I'd illustrated and drawn all these different kind of weeds or animals that were perhaps endangered, that were kind of local. And I illustrated them on the ground along with bits of poetry. So there were kind of four key themes of things that I was wanting to say. Firstly, kind of get people to kind of slow down and notice, and leading up to being more of a, how would I say it? More of a, ambassador's not the right word, more of an ambassador for the planet, to advocate for the planet and the environment. So we did a performance, and I had two of my other students come and help me, and they became the rain fairies, and they were trying to kind of facilitate and work with the general public as well as taking the lead of the watering. So they were being the rain, because it was actually quite sunny during the festival. So we introduced it, welcome to Rain Trail, explained a bit about the project, and then we took the public on this trail walking through these five different artworks, and as we went they were able to water and reveal it because of this hydrophobic paint. And it was amazing as well. Firstly, the hydrophobic paint worked really well. And so it really is literally invisible until it rains. So they were invited to be the rain. And with the help of the rain fairies, who looked absolutely gorgeous in their yellow waterproofs and yellow wellies as well, we walked through Bournemouth Gardens revealing these different kind of artworks, and then had lovely conversations with people as well, again around thinking about the language we use around weather, how we think about the rain, and actually how, you know, how we could engage and have different relations with it. So yeah.
That sounds amazing as well. And as you was explaining, I was thinking it's interesting that you used yellow, because a lot of people associate the colour yellow with sunny weather, and maybe they associate blue with rain. So I think it's interesting that you used yellow, obviously yellow wellet and boots, but the fact that you used a colour that maybe people would associate with sunny weather was interesting.
Yes, I mean, and this for me, it's interesting you pick up on that, Gemma, because it's been a bit of a, yellow is also associated with sun, but they're also the cliche colours that we imagine. So when we think of fishermen, or what's the brightest colour, you know, that stands out, and usually it stands out in so-called fog or weather that is often associated with being less ideal, is yellow. So I've had a bit of a battle with the idea of yellow, but it has just, for me, it is just screamed weather. And so again, as a way to attract people to come and do these things, and quite a lot of people have said, particularly in a festival context, it's been the really bright yellow that's attracted them to it. So yeah, so it has been a little bit of a conceptual battle in my own head about whether or not the yellow feels too sunny for that context. But for me, it's been very much like, if you think of a sou'wester or you think of a raincoat, those kind of cliches are always yellow, which was really been the kind of the motivation behind why I've used that colour. And also, I think it's because it is a happy colour, and it is a colour we associate with sunshine. But for me, it's like part of that taking people on that journey and that dialogue to get them to that place where they start thinking about the language in relation to weather, or start trying to kind of plant seeds around actually, you know, how can we think about having different relations with the weather if we are going to experience these longer, warmer, wetter, rainier, you know, winters, and also because of the unpredictability of the British weather anyway, you know, like we've experienced last summer, you know, and we don't really know at the moment whether the signs are that we're going to have another, you know, summer similar, or actually is it going to be a drought? You know, it's very, you know, difficult to forecast still. But then you will know that more than I will.
Yeah, every time you say the weather's unpredictable, I'm secretly smiling thinking, it's not, but I know what you mean. I mean, when you're not talking about sort of day-to-day weather as such, you're looking at like the climate, so the how will this summer have shaped up is what you're saying, is like,
yes,
how many hot spells are we going to have, how many cold spells, but like this is the same thing that we're here, you know, what we do know is that we're going to have some extreme in our summer, you know, something that's not yes. So that's the weather, the day-to-day stuff. We can definitely do that. But
yes,
I agree with you. We know that, yeah, when you look back, you think, right, what was that summer? What was that summer look?
And I think it's important to say as well, you know, I'm trying to connect people to things like rain. I'm not trying to connect them to dangerous, extreme weather conditions of rain. It's really like, can we expand our appreciation of weather, whereby we go out into it and we just don't try and hide away from it as such. You know, there's that wonderful quote, no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing, you know, which is a great quote, you know, or are there ways that we can infrastructure in the UK that, so say for example, in some Northern European countries, they'll have little kind of shelter pods, you know, that people on longer beach walks or things can have. So are there other interventions that we could perhaps start designing our infrastructure for wetter weather that enables us to be out in it more?
And you're already doing that. You're already changing people's perceptions. Like even talking on this podcast, now I said sunny is a... yellow is a sunny, happy colour. And as you were explaining that, I was thinking, of course, like, if you're out in the fog, you would wear a fluorescent jacket. You want to be noticed. And actually, I was thinking, oh, maybe yellow, it is associated with sunshine, but not necessarily. It can also be associated with rain or fog. And so already I'm changing the way that I'm thinking about it. So this is why we need these conversations. This is why we need everyone to talk about the weather as much as we can.
No, there's no rainbow without sunshines. All of that. All of that.
Yeah, I mean, I did another prototype, and it was called Blissful Rain, Isn't It? I haven't actually shared this one with you, so just going to tell you a little bit about it. But that was very much about, firstly, the obsession that the British have with talking about the weather and how we greet each other about the weather, and that actually it's an affront if we disagree around how we talk about the weather. So, oh, dreadful day. You know, it's like we're not necessarily even talking about the weather. It's just a way of how we bond in the UK talking about the weather. You know, so if I say, oh, God, dreadful day, if I then go, oh, no, well, actually, it's okay. That's a bit of a, it doesn't help with that kind of bonding relationship. So this other project was called Blissful Rain, Isn't It? It's led into my current project that I'm hoping to site at the Met Office in kind of October time. But it was, what it did was, again, I worked with Mark Benson, the creative technologist. It was a little bit more of a techie project. So it would use kind of pull down from the Wi-Fi data around what the weather is. And then when somebody approached, it would give them their own positive weather greeting that related to that weather. So hence the name Blissful Rain, Isn't It? And it was supposed to be about a dialogue around keeping thinking about those words that keep that positive around rain, rather than it being, oh, dreadful day. You know, it was, oh, blissful rain, isn't it? And trying to get people just through the language to think differently about how they might greet each other.
It's really interesting, but do you know what? There's quite a little nuance in there as well, isn't there? That you're in, like, you know, if you don't know someone, let's say, and you say, oh, it's a terrible day. Oh, yes, terrible day. There is a camaraderie in the sharing of that little micro moment as well. So, but yes, we should definitely be turning it around to be like, blissful rain. We needed the rain.
We need some blissful rain. I've actually been trying to kind of think, could we, I haven't got very far with this prototype. I think it needs probably a lot more budget or something to do it, but I've actually been trying to kind of design some kind of badge. So a bit like how we could use AI as an intervention to, if I'm kind of saying and I say something negative about the weather, could the AI, my AI badge, intervene and kind of offer up a positive greeting? A friend of mine was like, that's going to be so annoying, Alice. But it's unbelievable how many conversations, when you start to think about it, again, the bonding over the weather or just the passing of comments that people have, it is a negative around. It does, you know, adhere to the only sunny weather is good narrative, you know, as proposed by Stibb. And actually, if we had something that could kind of intervene in those conversations, might that help us think differently? I don't know. Maybe that's a step too far.
No, I think it's interesting because if I talk to people about going camping in the UK, they go, well, what happens if it rains? And I'm like, well, what happens if it rains? You lay in your tent, you listen to the rain hitting the canvas. It's the most relaxing sound. It's so beautiful. You fall asleep. Yeah, you might get a bit wet. Your stuff will dry. But lay in that tent and listen to the sound hitting the canvas. It's amazing. Like, why would you not want to do that? But like, no. It might rain. I'm like, yeah, but then you could have this other experience that's so magical and so lovely. Yes. Like, why would you not want to do that?
No. I mean, so I live in Dorset in Bournemouth now, and I grew up here. As a child, we didn't have loads of money, but what we did have is we had a beach hut. So all my summers really were spent at the beach hut, and it didn't matter whether it was sunny or rainy. But actually, the ones that I really remember are the moments when it was rainy and when the beach kind of cleared. And I remember me and my friend once, I don't know, we'd have probably been about 11, the beach had kind of cleared and we were just left in this whole wonderful ocean to ourselves. As the rain kind of came in, it changes the whole dynamic and volume as the rain kind of hits the sea and that all kind of goes grey and quiet. And then it started getting louder and louder. And we were just jumping and whooping and shouting with kind of excitement and just completely uninhibited by just having this complete freedom of being in the sea and having it to ourselves with this rain that just, yeah, so like whether you're camping or even you're on the beach, it's a different experience, but it doesn't mean it needs to be worse. And actually they can be really memorable.
Here, here. I agree with everything that you've just said. Yes, yes, yes. You mentioned a little bit, we've touched on a potential future project that you're working on. Are you able to share a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, of course. So it's called Weatherkin. And I would say it's a little bit of a homage to Donna Haraway that talks about, she talks about making kin. So from a kind of research perspective, I explore more than human. So again, how's that? How can we connect people to the more than human world? So beyond just humans, and that's really about how can we build more harmonious and have different relationships with the non-human world that inspire us to take care of it. So so that very much kind of draws on David Abram's work around more than human, but also Haraway, the calling it Weatherkin is really a made up word that I've thought of as the title. But it's again, it's about having different relationships with weather for life. And so Weatherkin is really a positive weather memories project. And again, I want to put it in the environment where people just come across it. So at the moment, it's going to go into a bus shelter at the Met Office as one of the first places it goes, maybe another project as well that can't really talk about that one at the moment. And so people, again, once they come and use the bus stop, if it's raining, I'll be working with Mark Benson, it'll have rain sensors in it, so it will only trigger when it rains. So in the past, I've kind of mitigated if the weather's going to be good. With this, it won't. And people will be using something like a bus stop, you know, in their day-to-day life. It would use the technology, it would trigger when it rains and trigger with proximity. And then when they enter the bus stop, you would hear other people's positive experiences of rain that maybe perhaps when you're in the rain and you're feeling a bit kind of or disgruntled or however people might think, actually planting the seed of listening to people's positive experiences might just help them, you know, think differently about that. So that's the current project that I'm working on at the moment. As it's part of my PhD, I'm currently just going through the ethics applications. And then once all that's passed, then hopefully I'm going to start working with a diverse range of people to capture their memories. Some of them will be meteorologists like yourselves. Some of them hopefully will be school children. As a member of a yacht club, hopefully some of them will be sailors. Eventually the project could you know, include people like farmers and just different people that have different relationships with weather. And then maybe at some very future point, I might like to take it to a different country. So when I've been researching weather memories, people that experience monsoon seasons such as Vietnam or India, they again have very different relationships and really kind of joyful memories around rain. So I think it could be really nice to start bringing in that contrast or just shared memories and experiences of rain with people from different countries as well.
So Alice, thank you so much for answering all our questions. Let's move on to our get to know me round. Gemma, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, so the get to know me round is just some random questions. We have two weather related ones and the rest of them are just totally random. So the first one we always ask is, what is your favorite season?
Oh, favorite season, that's tricky. I do love the spring. I love spring rain. And yeah, I love the smells that are activated by rain in spring and just everything coming to life. I mean, I love all seasons. I love all seasons because of the diversity that helps me love spring.
Spring is,
I mean,
lovely.
It's a good answer. It's my favorite season as well.
I was more recently converted, but I have converted. I was on a walk the other day and the birds were singing, the smell of the flowers, it was just beautiful. And I was in that moment, I was like, yeah, this is my favorite season. I'm gonna have to tell Ash that she was right.
I mean, I do love February as well. I love February when you get just walks on the beach in February, cold, bright, they're very, very lovely as well. I wish I could say rain was my favorite season any time of rain. Yeah. But you know, as I said, my work is about trying to connect people to something we experience more of and find more love of that. So I think it depends on context. Like I said, love being in the sea when it's raining, that's a lovely moment. But favorite season, gotta be spring.
Well, my next question was going to be, what's your favorite type of weather? I think I know the answer, but what is your favorite type of weather?
I do. I love a thunderstorm as well. I love all these kind of, the extreme weathers, and I love snow, and I do really love rain. And I think if you have your own place, you have to have a place where you can enjoy rain that's not just in your bed, and for me, as I said, I've got my tree that I'm just looking out to now. It's not in leaf yet, but that's my summer rain tree. Or when it's in leaf, which lasts quite a while. So yeah, I think for me it's about having the right place and right moments to appreciate weather.
So lovely. I'm going to start thinking about how do I actually appreciate weather and where do I appreciate weather?
100%. I'm all over it now. Like every, but I do. I genuinely do say that. So our best friend Rachel used to say, "There's no such thing as bad weather. There's only such thing as bad clothing choices." And I do actually say that, but I'm now thinking about it in a really different way. I'm like, how do I completely embrace this day? Yeah, how can I talk? And I'm going to say that next time somebody says, "Oh, terrible weather," I'm going to say,
It's
"Sunny
blissful rain,
skies."
isn't
I'm going to say,
it?
"Quite blissful rain." That's going to be my new catchphrase. Blissful rain.
You need to get blissful rain into one of your TV forecasts, Ash.
I'm going to say yes, a blissful rain. I'll get it in. I'll get it in. Same
When
with
you do,
you.
let me know.
Same
Send me
with
a
you.
clip.
Yeah, I will.
And me.
And now we're moving on to the really random one. So, if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, what would be my superpower? Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I think of my superpower, and it takes me back. I started to think of Harry Potter. I would love to breathe underwater.
I mean,
That
it's a
would be
great
good.
superpower. The oceans
I'm a
are.
qualified scuba diver, but definitely breathing underwater would be awesome to be able to go those real depths and see things that you wouldn't otherwise see. I'm a bit scared of heights, so I don't tend to kind of go to the air. I tend to go to water.
I'm laughing because the atmospheric pressure in water is absolutely gigantic. So I always do find it a little chuckling when people are like, "I'm afraid of heights." I'm like, depths of water are way more scary. Yes, it is the great unexplored of our planet. And yeah, that's a really good one.
This is a new one I've literally just thought about. If you had to choose an animal to represent you, what would it be?
Oh, I'm sure I should come up with something more inspiring. Just trying to think of some kind of weird woodlouse or something. I tend to think of myself
Really, I was thinking of a leopard for you.
Were you? Well,
Yes, I
I've got two
was.
cats. I've got two cats. My natural thing is to think of a cat or a dog, be a smelly old dog that's a bit grey around the muzzle, but then that's kind of physical things. So yeah, I don't know, really difficult. Yeah, really difficult in terms of, well, maybe a spider building some amazing kind of web structure. That would be quite nice. I don't
I
know.
love
Oh.
that. I love that.
That is lovely. And also,
Yeah.
like when you go outside and there's like a bit of dew or a bit of rain
Awesome.
and it clings to the web as well, it's even more beautiful.
Oh,
So,
really
yeah.
beautiful. Evolves.
Yeah.
Good point.
Along those lines, the question we also ask people is, if you were a fruit or vegetable, what would you be?
If I would be a fruit or a vegetable. God, these are so difficult. If I would be a fruit or a vegetable. This is really interesting because I'm hoping to do a project around climate change and food security. So it's very interesting to think of a vegetable, but I'm trying to kind of think about it in a not overthought kind of way. So I'll probably just be an apple. I'll just be an apple.
I mean, an
Or
apple is a
maybe a
great
blackberry.
all-rounder.
A blackberry,
Ooh,
a wild blackberry.
seasonal.
That's it.
And no one said either of those yet. Haven't
No.
they? What do they say?
Oh,
We've
people
had all sorts.
are also the only thing that we are always amazed at is that people come up with something. We've only had one guest who didn't come up with something. They're like, "I just don't know." Everybody quite quickly, within about a minute or so, will come up with something. It's
Yeah.
really
They're
interesting.
always different. We've had
Yeah.
pineapples, we've had, oh my God,
Kiwis.
blueberries, kiwis.
I mean, I can't try think of more.
Potatoes,
Yeah.
yeah.
Tomato, look,
And
any loads.
it's because it kind of takes you out from thinking about what you do, but then I don't know, are you, I don't know.
It is. Do you know what it is? It's just accessing a part of your brain that doesn't, it's like,
Come on then.
we all speak our own language. Me and Gemma speak a certain type of weather, but you speak a certain type of art. And then when you get asked something outside of your language zone, you're like, oh yeah, hang on.
What fruit are you two?
Well, I am probably a mango because where mangoes are actually grown, and if you eat mangoes from where they are grown, they are the most beautiful fruit. And I would eat them any day over like a piece of chocolate. But I just think a mango is a largely underrated fruit. I
Oh,
love
mango.
it. I mean, I
Lovely.
just love a mango. They're
I
beautiful,
do
they're
love that mango.
self-contained, their skin is really good. But the skin is not too thick, so they're easy to peel. Like, they're just an all-rounder for me. A little bit exotic as well.
Yeah, very, very nice.
I always struggle with this one a little bit because I always just go to what my favorite vegetable or fruit is at the time. But I think I would probably be a potato because it's quite versatile.
I would eat you.
Comes in different forms. Oh, thanks.
It's so versatile.
I'm great mashed or roasted, you know.
Versatility, that's
Nice. Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I love a mango. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, mango sorbet is great.
Yeah,
It's my
mango with a
fave.
bit of squeezed lime. Mango. Have you had
Beautiful.
griddled mango? Oh,
No.
hot griddled mango,
Is it good?
squeeze
I'm
of
gonna go.
lime, Greek yogurt.
Oh, beautiful. I'm
Oh, I'm
there.
trying that.
Might try it in my sandwich maker. There
Yes.
it goes. That sounds good. I'll send you a picture when I try it.
You could just, yeah, and then what if it's really good, I'm like, I'll come round to your house and you can make it for me. I don't have a sandwich maker, so I'll just come
And
to
we'll
yours.
bring the
Yes.
wellies.
Yes. A welly
And
warmth
we'll
with
go
some
find the bush
mango.
shelter and eat our mango with the wellies on in the bush shelter.
Sounds like the perfect day. I'm there.
It really does.
Okay, we've got two more questions. So, if you can invite one person to dinner, it can be anybody at all from any historical time frame or even a fictional character, who would it be?
Okay, I think I'm going to invite David Abraham. I have mentioned him, but just I
Yeah.
would love to have a
Mentioned.
conversation with him around language and weather. And yeah, so it would be David Ad Abraham, who's a geo philosopher.
Amazing. And our final question that we always ask everyone is, what's one thing that you wish everybody knew about enjoying and engaging with the weather?
I think the thing I wish everybody would know is that the way that they think about the weather informs their relationship with it, and or they think about the language and how they build their relationship with it. Because at the moment, too many people are we kind of diss the weather, and this is what we've got, this is what we have to live with. So really, it's about stopping to think about the language and their relationship with the weather and how that's actually impacting their behavior. And because actually that's making them, it's less good for their mental health. We've got real problems with mental health in the UK, and also it doesn't help them build pro-environmental behaviors either. So I think it's about really thinking about the language they use in relation to things. Some people talk about nature as being a really problematic word. So in some indigenous communities, they don't have a word for nature. And that's because it actually creates separation between human and nature, whereas they see it as one. So I think it's thinking about their relationship with language. And the one thing I'd really want them to think about is the words they use and how that could perhaps, if they use those differently, it could help them connect to the more than human world for positive well-being and pro-environmental behaviour.
That's amazing, and it's so interesting to think of it that way. And also, there's so many great words for different weather types as well. So you can use all these amazing words that there already are, like apricity and all these other things. So yeah, that's so interesting.
Blissful rain,
Blissful
our new
rain.
winter
Blissful
words.
rain.
Though it there's a lesson for life in all of that, though, isn't there? Stuff happens in life, and it can be hard and it can be tough, but the language you use around it and how you celebrate it or not, or get through it, is about the language that you use and you hear around what has happened. So there's a much larger, lovely message in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really what we want everyone to take away today is think about think about the language you use that actually builds connection with the natural world rather than separates us from it.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Alice.
No, so much fun. We've learned so much.
And it's really changed the way that, we learn so much on this podcast. It's changed the way that we look at the weather, how we're going to engage in the weather. I'm going to go and find a place where I'm going to really appreciate certain types of weather. So, yeah, thank you so much for chatting to us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on. It has been really super fun. And love talking to you. And I will look forward to coming up when I'm next in London. I'll bring the wellies with me. And hopefully you've got time for a coffee. But no, thank you so much for inviting me on the programme. And also how we met through I did a talk at the Met Office, and I think one of you must have liked that. So thanks, Gemma. And then this has ended up into this conversation. So awesome. Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the time as well to chat about my work. And hopefully you'll get to see Weatherkin at some point.
Yeah, can't wait. I can't wait for the wellies either. So yeah, definitely up for meeting up and trying out the wellies. But yeah, if people want to find you on social media or learn a little bit more about your work, where could they go to do that?
Yeah, so I will hopefully, as part of Weatherkin, I will get a whole website organised with all the projects, and people can read a little bit more about it. For now, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way to get in touch. Or they can email me directly through Arts University Bournemouth as well. So just get in touch at Arts University Bournemouth. And I'm Alice Stevens in graphics. LinkedIn's a great way to meet me as well. And I'm sorry, I'm quite busy. So I tend to kind of downplay most of the social media platforms at the moment, just to kind of manage everything else I'm trying to do. But there will be a website coming soon.
No, and LinkedIn's great. A great way, because that's how we met. Like, I saw the talk you'd done at the Met Office, and I was like, that's so interesting. So I liked the post, and then we got chatting about what you did, and now we've been able to chat and learn about all this amazing stuff that we wouldn't have been necessarily, it would have taken us longer to find out about your work if I hadn't seen you on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn's a great place to...
Absolutely, and people. Vice versa. Yeah, absolutely. No, so it's been really good.
I just
good.
Want a future where in every bus shelter in the UK... It's just something about the weather.
Yeah.
And that's what I want.
Me too.
And that's what I want.
So much scope.
I'm putting it out into the universe.
Lots of scope. That would be great. And I think that we need things, both creative things in within the world. We don't want to have to work at doing it. You know, how can we actually meet people in there every day and have these kind of discussions? It's absolutely what we need. So, definitely more bus stops, more audio bus stops.
Hear, hear. Thank you so much, Alice, for joining us.
If you have enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe, rate and review the podcast. It really does mean a lot to us, and it allows us to reach more people as well. Share the podcast as well with lots of people. We need to get more people talking about the weather, appreciating the weather, engaging with the weather. So why not listen to this podcast? Hopefully you're listening to this podcast on a walk. Hopefully it might be raining, like really have engaged in the weather. Or listen to our podcast while you're out on a walk in the rain one day. That would be amazing. If you do that, let us know. We would love to hear about your weather walks and listen to the podcast. If you would like to find us on social media, we are on Instagram for the Love of Weather. We're also on Blue Sky and TikTok for the Love of Weather on all of those. And we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more.
Thanks for listening. Bye.